My name is Bruce McCurdy. My father and mother are the Reverend Wayne and Maybelle McCurdy. My dad was running Storm Mountain Camp out by Rockerville. And today is his birthday, his 93rd birthday, actually. And so on his birthday 50 years ago today, as every year, because he was a pastor, my mom and my dad would go to annual conference. An annual conference that year was in Mitchell, South Dakota. So I have two older brothers and a younger sister. So there were four of us, and they left us at the camp with the camp staff, which, I mean, here's three adults. Except you look back on it now, 50 years later, and you go, they were 18. They were children, too. And so, you know, and if it had been a normal few days, all would have been well. So my dad was running this Methodist camp, and it was, you know, kids, hundreds of kids coming through the camp week in and week out. And he had actually talked the people into leaving one day early on the 8th so that he and mom could go to Mitchell. So there's kind of two sides to this story. There's the kids' side and there's the parents' side. And I have quizzed my mom's passed away, but I have quizzed my dad about it recently, just to knowing this event was coming up, just to kind of hear both sides of it. So I'll start with the kids' side. They left us with three camp counselors. I believe they were two 18-year-old girls and a 19-year-old. Marnie, Sue, and Eric. And they were all high-quality human beings and awesome. So there were a series of buildings. There were three main cabins. There was the main house, and there's something called Allison Hall. And if you've ever watched Dances with Wolves, parts of Dances with Wolves, the parts in the mountains, the cast and crew stayed at Storm Mountain Camp at Allison Hall. So it's just there's a little side trivia. There's a rabbit hole. You can go look that up. Anyway, that was long after this. So earlier that day, here's how I remember the day, and there's going to be holes in this, and it would be, you know, but we had wanted to go swimming up at Sheridan Dam. And so the camp counselors packed us all into the car, the van, whatever we had, and we went up swimming. And they saw clouds coming. And I remember it being really early in the day that it started to rain, but that doesn't make sense to me now, this many years later, because we wouldn't have left for Sheridan Dam in the morning. We would have probably gone right after lunch, had lunch, because we were little kids. I was 8. My younger sister was 7. My brother Stuart was 10, and my oldest brother Scott was 12. And so they would have probably fed us lunch and then said, let's go to the lake, you know, or maybe it was an hour after because there was still that fallacy of can't swim for an hour, whatever. But so, I mean, you know, 1 o'clock. And so we swam and we had a great time and it was a beautiful day. And then they said, it looks like it's going to rain. We should go home, kids. And of course we moaned all the way to the car, but I remember, you know, being pissed about it. And we got home, and getting home, it started to rain. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was 4 o'clock, 4:30, maybe it was 3. So I don't know if you're aware of what Storm Mountain is like. There's about a mile and a half to 2 mile road that crawls down a ravine. The road winds all the way down, right? And so there's a place called Coon Hollow, which is maybe a quarter to a half a mile up from the camp. And so there's a creek that comes out of Coon Hollow, and that creek goes all the way down, snakes through the camp, goes all the way down to Spring Creek where it bleeds out. And so it started to rain, and that tiny little creek, which, I mean, my grandkids could step across it without getting wet. That little creek became 30 feet wide. I mean, just this massive, you know, cascade of water. I am told, and I don't, please don't hold me to these numbers. I'm telling you, this is what an 8-year-old remembers, that it rained for 12 hours and there were 17 and a half inches of rain. I remember them saying that, listening to the radio. And listening to the radio after this is over, I remember all kinds of things. One of them was, and I still look back, having been in radio for so long, myself saying this would be so crass, but I remember them saying on the radio, if you find a boot, don't put your foot in it. It might already have one. Mm-hmm. And if you see bodies, call here. The choppers are going to be out looking, and you know, looking for bodies. So the camp is, let's say the road is 2 miles in, and then you've got this kind of, it sprouts out into a wider canyon. And so everything just funnels straight down. So the water had nowhere to go but through the camp, into the house, and then down through to Spring Creek. I want to say we lost five to seven cabins. You know, there was one of them that Eric Granager was in, and it was like an 1880s mining cabin kind of thing, and gone. But he found his socks, like floating as a pair, not together, not bound up, but just floating next to each other, like a quarter mile from there. And he found his sport coat and just a few weird things, you know, that he found. But then if you look up, I was told this today because I had lunch out at the camp today because I wanted to come back. And I am told that there is about 20 feet off the ground, a metal bunk bed folded around a tree. And that is still there. I wasn't able to find it, but the camp, the people who run the camp, Laura and Levi, could point it out where it is. Levi knew exactly where it was. Anyway, so there were these announcements on the radio. This is one of my more vivid memories of this, because Methodist pastors don't make a lot of money. And so they would say, there are choppers out looking for bodies. If you make one land and you don't need them, there's a $500 fine. So, I mean, hearing this on the radio, most likely KKLS, I mean, don't make it land if you don't actually need it. So I and my two brothers had put on our new cowboy shirts and our new cowboy hats that our parents probably bought us because they felt guilty and because our clothes got washed away or who knows what. Anyway, so we decide we're going to go down. Dad has told us that the whole swimming area has washed out and we wanted to see it. So the three of us go walking down to the swimming area, and around the corner comes a big, I remember it being a double-bladed chopper with a big red cross on the side of it or a something. Maybe it was just there's things you invent in your head, but I remember it being a double-bladed chopper and this guy leaning out this big door and like thumbs down, making a thumb like, we're going to land. And we're all like, no, thumbs up. And I'm thinking, my dad doesn't have $500.
Get out of here.
But it was really interesting because just this, so this was several days after, but it was an interesting thing to remember. So the actual, going back to the day of the event, so the water started to fill up this little creek and it started to wash away our yard. And our front yard actually wound up having an 8 to 9 foot trench in the front of it that when the water overflowed those banks, the water actually did come into the house and come up about 5 feet, up to the fifth step. That's how we were measuring things that night. The water's come up to the third step. No, the water's up to the fourth step. Water's up to the fifth step. There were two really important events of the evening that I remember. The first was the huge crash of the garage door caving in and water then, pushing into the garage, pushing into the kitchen door and coming into the house. Now, shortly before then, probably it wasn't dark yet, but it was getting twilight, so probably 8-ish, because it got dark in that canyon very quickly. So I would say 8. The rain stopped. And so I remember going with Eric outside and looking around, and there had already been almost like silt drifts in the front yard or in the side yard, this tiny little side yard. And it was like, you know, it had been washing all of the gravel and the sand and all of the stuff from the road into our yard or pushing it down the stream. And keep in mind, again, my parents aren't home, so we're winging it. And I remember saying to Eric, I mean, or, you know, are we going to, do we stay in the house or do we go over there? Because Allison Hall just seemed bigger, safer. And he said, we'd have to get across this. And I think we're better off just staying in the house. And that made perfect sense to an 8-year-old. I mean, and I'm sure they talked it over and whatever. But so we went back in the house, and then it started to rain again. Because I think they thought the rain was done. So let's just stay in the house. Why would we go anywhere? And besides, we'd have to cross that big stream, which is now dangerous. So we went back in the house, and it started to rain again. And then it was dark, and it really started to rain. I mean, bucketing rain for hours and hours on end. So this is when it was after dark when the first crash came, and that was the water coming through the garage door and in through the house. So the house, just before that, we had gone downstairs and started to set things on top of the piano, set things on countertops, and set things up higher. Think, why wouldn't we carry it upstairs? I don't know. Anyway, but we started putting things up. The water came splashing in. And when all was said and done, it had come up about 5 feet. It left about 1.5 feet of mud in the house, as I recall. In the middle of the night, so then there was a second crash. And this one was a tree, a big tree stump that came down and smashed into the front of the house. There was a railing on the front of the house at that point, and it basically destroyed the railing, but it kept it from coming into the house. Otherwise, it would have been right in the living room. And so that was, you know, the second big crash. And it was like, oh, crap. You know, this is realization. We're in trouble. And the kids are, you know, I call them kids because, I mean, they were. But the adults, sure, you know, we just kept watching the water come up and come up. And they're starting to get concerned about the structural integrity of the house and how high will this come and are we going to get, you know, trapped? So they made a plan that we would crawl out of the window in the bathroom upstairs, and that dropped down onto a garage that had a flat roof. And so we would tie bed sheets together, drop down onto the flat roof. Eric then was able to jump down, get a ladder, and we were going to, and there was water there, but we were going to then turn the ladder around and climb up onto the hill, which was directly behind the house, and just sit under a tree in the rain the rest of the night. At least we knew the forest and the tree, you know, the mountain wasn't going anywhere. The house might. And so they started tying these things together and making preparations. And I want to say that was 2-ish in the morning, somewhere in there. I mean, it was late. They had told me at one point, as an 8-year-old boy, just go to bed. Just go to, we'll wake you up if we need something. And of course I didn't go to sleep. I will tell you this is on a more personal nature, but I was probably 45 before I stopped having nightmares when it was raining at night. I mean, that was a traumatic thing to process through. And anyway, it turns out then the water went down one stair. And so they said, well, let's not go out the window. And so, you know, Eric came back in probably through the window. And by the way, I took a picture of that window today. And it's like, because I was at the camp.
Sure.
It's like 1.5 feet by 1 foot. I mean, it's just tiny, tiny window. But we were small people at that point. And, you know, I don't know if I'd fit through it now. But anyway, so we stuck it out the rest of the night. And the sun came up, you know, 5 or so and 6 o'clock. And we, I mean, there are no cars that we can drive out. The road from Coon Hollow all the way down to Spring Creek is gone. I mean, there is nothing left of it. And so we don't know whether, you know, where to walk out to, but there are 3 main trails out. There's the road, which we know is 2 miles. You can go up. Over kind of behind Allison Hall, you can go up and over that hill. And there was an old gentleman who owned a cabin up there. We didn't know him very well, but he'd been there a long time. And then there was another trail that was kind of more to the west. And the goal we knew was to try to get to Anderson's. Warren Anderson lived up the road from us. His kids and our kids were friends, and you know, our parents always said, "Hey, if you ever need something, just call Warren." And he was ex-military, and you know, a good guy. And Billy was his kid, and he and I were friends. And anyway, so we knew the goal was to get to Anderson's, because that's where our parents would come looking for us. And so we strapped to our back whatever we, you know, I had a backpack at that point, and we took water, and there was still water running, as I recall, which is weird. I don't know whether it was good water or not, but I know they have their own wells out there. So anyway, so we hiked up and over the top and found this old guy at the cabin. And I somehow, somebody found Warren Anderson, and they came and picked us up. And there was a road, the fast way to Warren, do you know the name of that, the road that goes right by the camp? Something Mountain Drive, Silver Mountain Drive. So Warren told us the story that he was driving home in the rain the night before, and he's like, something just seemed wrong. Just something was wrong, and the road was dark, and it was super dark out. And he said, I just stopped, and I walked ahead just to see. I got soaking wet, but the road was completely washed out. And if you look, there's a section on Silver Mountain Road where there's a creek 30 feet down, and it just took that whole section of road, just gone. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so you can go back out to Highway 16 and come around the other side. And anyway, so that's kind of our side of the story, the kids. And we were fine. I mean, we didn't, the next few days or, you know, weeks, we just spent cleaning up and helping our parents as best we could, or at least staying out of the way. There weren't any camps of kids, but there were work camps that came down to Storm Mountain and to help us. And there was one that helped put together, they blew our piano out. A guy came down. And I want to say the Rapid City Journal, in the weeks after, did an article on the camp and the guy cleaning out our piano. That sticks in my head. Here's a very funny story, by the way. Okay, this is a bit of a rabbit trail, but who cares? Anyway, so my parents had a brown couch downstairs. And after the flood, I mean, pastors don't make a lot of money. And so they decided they would recover it. And they picked this gaudy, awful floral pattern. It was the 70s. And so time went on, and that couch was obsolete. And my parents gave it to me. And I took it off to college. I took it off to, you know, to my first apartment, all of those. And eventually wound up, because I was working for a radio station in Grand Forks, there was no place to, like, have a nap at work. Because, I mean, you want to have a nap at work, don't you? And it was a great napping couch. And so I donated it to the station. It was in kind of one of the side rooms. And you know, our morning show producers would sleep on it. And anyway, I drove by, because I have family in Grand Forks still. I drove by in 1997. I was up helping my aunt clean out her house. And there's a flood there again. And there out on the curb by XL93 was was the couch. It took two floods to kill it. But it was effective the second time. That was hilarious. I just thought that it was kind of funny. So the other side of the story is my parents' side. And I just got this from my dad. So they're off in Mitchell. They went to annual conference. And, of course, no cell phones. There's no ability to contact anybody. All the phone lines are out. They're told about 10 o'clock. There's some really bad stuff going on. And you better make plans to go. But do not go tonight. You won't be able to get in. They're not allowing anybody, blah, blah, blah. So my dad was in Mitchell. And he claims that he made the trip from Mitchell to Rapid City in 3.5 to 4 hours. I mean, that he just tromped her down. Pedal and, oh, yeah. I mean, because, and you know, and it was he and my mom driving back. And my mom was not a speed demon, but I think they left at about 4 in the morning, just before daybreak. And, you know, and he said, we didn't know where you kids were. We didn't know whether you were alive. And, yeah, we were scared to death. And they, of course, you know, went first to find the Andersons, because that had always been the plan. If you ever need something, go to the Andersons. And I have no idea whatever happened to any of them, the Andersons. It would be fun to know that. But But so they found us there, and then we drove as far as we could down. At some point, it was either that, I think that next day or the day after, I can't remember. But I made my mom wear an Army helmet. I don't know why that seemed appropriate, but yeah, you should have an Army helmet on, Mom. And so she was a sport. And so she, I mean, we were walking down from, we had to park up by Coon Hollow and then walk the rest of the way down into camp. And it's all over rock the whole way. And I mean, you start looking at the house and what, I mean, foot and a half of mud, probably 3 feet in the garage, because that was a straight shot right down that little creek, right into the garage. My dad took his study. He had his office there because he was the camp manager, but he was also a pastor at Piedmont at the time. And he took all of his books, all of his photos, all of his everything, and threw it into this 9-foot pit out in front of the house that the water had dug. It's almost like it churned. The water came down and found, you know, the beginning of the house and just churned there. And so churned this giant hole right in front and then found its way downstream to the right. It was very weird. So we filled that up with, furniture and anything, you know, mud, whatever we could get out of the house. Anything that was in the house went in the pit. I mean, and it was weird to go look and look today and find, oh, there's where the pit was. I mean, you couldn't pick it out in the yard, but I kind of knew where it was. It was a formative experience. Let's put it that way.